sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The consolidation continues. Markets mixed for the week, but up for the month. European bank stress tests are out. Only one failure. And we have some special guests today, Getty and Tristan from Teen Traders. Thought we'd get the young people on and see what they have to say. All this and much more on episode number 470 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, and hopefully you're enjoying your summer as I am. This is Andrew Horowitz, and we're talking on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We're coming towards the end of the summer, the final 1 month. I remember that when I lived up north, it was a big thing. Kind of Memorial Day was the start of it. People would break out their white pants and their white patent leather shoes. And the summer was here, and then there it was, Labor Day. Kind of the end of the summer. It was kind of a short cycle. I live in Florida, so it's kind of summer here all the time. It's warm. It's nice. Yeah, the winter gets down to maybe the 40s, the 50s, every once in a while in the 30s. But generally speaking, South Florida, the weather's always good. So come on down and visit when you get a chance. We have a lot to talk about today in terms of what's going on with markets and the economy, as well as some of the news items that have hit the wires, talking about earnings, of course. We have some great guests on. I thought that it'd be interesting to bring on some young people to talk about what they're doing. This is actually two very young people that have a little Twitter account, and they have a YouTube platform that they talk about various things, and they call themselves the Teen Traders. So we'll get them on in a little while to talk about what they think is going on, some of their favorite stocks, etc. But before we do that, let's talk about some technicals. Let's talk about the markets, and let's talk about what's going on. And as a matter of fact, I did talk about a lot of this on Frank Curzio's podcast. You can go to frankcurzio.com. Check out what's going on there, the latest podcast I'm on. We talked for about 45 or 50 minutes about markets, about areas, about gold and gold stocks. We talked about some of my favorite stocks that I like that were doing pretty well due to the fact that they are U.S.-based and U.S.-centric, because the rest of the world is obviously having a lot more problems, and it is much more favorable to invest in U.S.-based stocks, particularly the high-quality, high dividends these days, as we can see by how the outperformance of those has done to the other stocks that are not such high quality or haven't been paying as high of a dividend. So talked about that there. We also, by the way, just to mention that I'll be speaking and having a seminar, which you can join, a webinar online about fundamental analysis, something that they don't usually do over at TradeStation, but they invited me on the 3rd of August to check out some of the ideas that we have about how to better understand fundamental analysis, looking under the hood, taking a peek at ratios, taking a peek at some of the indicators that we use, how we have some things set up, not only in TradeStation, but in our systems to look at the growth rates of earnings and revenues and things of that nature. If you want to, it is free. It's in the afternoon. You can sign up. I'll put the link on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on the show notes for this particular episode. We'll also tweet it out. And if you haven't been following me, you can get those tweets. Just follow Andrew Horowitz, one long word. We'll get you following me on Twitter. And I put out a variety of charts and things every once in a while throughout the day. Some announcements. You also get the announcement of the podcast pretty quickly. But let's talk about what's going on in terms of some of the earnings that we've seen over the last week or so. There was like close to 200 or so S&P companies that reported, and really dominated by the big mega cap names. We saw the beginning of the outperformance of the mega caps when Microsoft had put out their earnings. Then Apple, which had its second quarterly and consecutive quarterly reduction in earnings overall. And we saw that the iPhone and the Mac and the iPad sold significantly lower numbers than they had 1 year ago. However, the numbers beat estimates, and that's all the market wants to see right now, that estimates are being beaten, and about 75% of stocks as of this point are beating estimates. We know the bar has come down very significantly, but nonetheless, companies are beating. About 60% or so are beating on revenues, and that's a bit of a leap. We did see that last week's numbers were better than expected on earnings, and that did help at least keep markets in a status quo. Markets kind of dip down a little bit. They pop back up. There's a very significant consolidation that is going on. If you look at the price of the S&P, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ started to come up a bit, of course, because of the outperformance of companies like Amazon and Google. And even we saw the return of Netflix of about 10% from their low after their earnings. And we did see Microsoft do better, of course. And all the major companies, and you know, that would really push the needle on the NASDAQ 100, outperformed. So that's good to see. However, we're starting to get into what we saw last year. Remember what we saw last year? Where the large cap, mega cap names were really pulling up markets substantially. The rest of the market was kind of just following along, but not that much. We saw that significant divergence in returns between the large cap and the small caps, like what we're seeing this year. The significant difference between the higher yielding and the lower yielding stocks, the favorable move towards one sector or one type of security versus another, is again very pronounced this year, just in a different way. The rotation is on. Obviously, we saw a lot of the commodity names get hammered after the nice rise that we saw, but particularly in the oil sector, as oil clipped about 41 and a quarter at the low last week. We're entering into the slowest season for demand of oil products. And maybe there's a lot of investors that are starting to think that the high levels of inventory are going to remain and therefore are getting out while the going's good. On Friday, ExxonMobil came out with their earnings. They missed in a meaningful way. I mean, in a seriously meaningful way. Stock was only down about 2.5%, but that's pretty significant for ExxonMobil. The size of the company, et cetera. But really, you got to think about it. They've been very resilient in times when they've seen a significant drop-off from their main commodity that they deal with, main product they deal with. Pricing structure, of course, of oil has dropped. And then on top of that, with this massive earnings miss, I mean, probably a 35 to 40% miss compared to where expectations were, stock only down about 2.5%, showing that there is still a significant amount of, I won't go so far as say euphoria, but there's a significant amount of excitement when it comes to the outlook for stocks long term. Even with the really good employment numbers that we're seeing here and the various regional Fed manufacturing indices picking up, Friday's GDP number, that was something that we really need to talk about. And we'll do that and talk about what happened last week in terms of the economic numbers, what to make of them, as well as what's coming up next week, right after we talk with our guests. Let's get to them. And our guests today are Getty and Tristan from Teen Traders. I thought it would be interesting to see from a young person's point of view what's going on with markets and find out a little bit about more what they're doing in terms of this whole concept of young people investing these days. So Getty and Tristan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. Getty?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Well, thanks for joining us today. So
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, so I thought we'd talk about you know, what this Teen Traders is all about, the concept, why you got involved and interested in the idea of markets and stocks and things of that nature. So Getty, what got you interested initially in markets?
When I was younger, back in lower school, and I was like in between like, I don't know, 6 and like 10, the news that was always on in my house was CNBC. When I was younger, it really didn't make any sense. And I was always kind of curious what what the faces on the TV were saying. And over time, the curiosity got to me. And once I was learning about what was going on and what the people were doing and the money that was being made, that's what kind of took it off with me.
So how old are you now?
I'm 17.
17. Okay. So you're in high school.
Yep. Senior, going into senior year.
Very nice. And Tristan, what about you? How did you get first interested in this whole thing?
Well, my dad and his brother are on Fast Money and like the Halftime Report, and they have been doing that since I was born. And so watching them on TV and stuff, it kind of excited me because it looked really fun and random and kind of risky, which I liked. And I just really wanted to get into it. So, not for very professional reasons, it just looked really fun, to be honest.
Right.
And then I just started had to work and just seeing how, I mean, back then the floor was a little bit more vibrant. So we'd go to the CBOE. It was like really cool. People were yelling and it just seemed really awesome. So that's what got me into it.
Right. People ripping up paper, throwing it in the air, all sorts of stuff. A big mess. Starts out clean in the morning, ends up a real mess by the afternoon, right?
Exactly.
So, and by the way, Tristan's dad is John Najarian. We've had on the show before, actually. John and I are... We talk a bit. We talk every once in a while, so it's kind of nice to have the next generation. My kids aren't so interested, you know. I don't know. It's they're interested in the stocks. I think for the same reason. My son is 20, and he's been very interested. He's had some trading accounts that he's worked on and he likes, but I guess it's dependent on you know what your general likes are in terms of how you do things. But let's talk a little bit about you've made a bunch of videos. So why do you do that?
Because we were kind of just talking in the office about stocks we're liking because we were both at my dad's office one summer and we were paper trading, and Andrew, the camera guy, was like, this is actually a really cool idea. You guys can just be having a normal conversation, and I think people might enjoy watching that.
So you made a bunch of videos, and I know you talked in the beginning of the year about some oil issues, some things that were bottoming out. You've talked about, actually, I thought it was interesting, one of your videos on Teen Traders was about how you were shopping towards the end of the year, I guess Christmas, and the things that you were observing and some of the, you kind of said, well, hey, what's going on in the malls? What's going on with shopping? And Getty, you had talked about the ideas there. So is the generation of the ideas that you have from the surroundings you have, from the things that you do, or is there more involved?
You know, it's a lot of taking in what's going on globally. Not so much like not necessarily globally markets. I am taking account for that though, but mostly, you know, whether it be that, you know, the terror across the world, or if there's, you know, the time of year, it's Christmas or Halloween, or, and there's, you know, certain, companies that pertain to those things more. That's what really I like to look into.
So you like to look at, let's call it consumer trends. I guess
yeah,
that would be the whole thing. You know, so
yeah.
when you're looking at something and you see that, for example, let's talk about an interesting one that I think I've been talking about a lot because I just think it's so ridiculous, frankly. But this whole Pokemon Go craze. So you saw that all of a sudden out of nowhere, everybody was just walking around, as I call them, Pokezoms, and they were just, you know, kind of mulling the streets, looking down at their phone, looking up, and then swiping. Everybody was kind of in that hunched over look on their phones. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. I play Pokemon Go.
So Pokemon Go got, you know, the Nintendo, which has the rights to Pokemon in the game, of course, the originator of the game, had a big move, just a tremendous move. About 100% in a couple of weeks or so. So is that something that you'd be looking at trading, or, you know, getting involved in, or is that something you're like, well, that's going to be a fad and it's going to be quickly dissolved?
Well, I think
Kristen, I'll hand it off to Kristen.
Okay. I think one of the good things about fads is because you don't have to trade for that long of a time. So I think, like, that's something that I would invest in, because even though, you know, who knows what's going to happen in a month or so with this app, I mean, it's people of all different age ranges. It's people who were, like, kids of the 90s who are now 20 that really enjoy Pokemon, and now, like, little kids that are just kind of confused by it. And so I think it is a good investment because I don't know if it's in the long term, but I definitely think it's obviously very popular. I mean, you can't walk around without seeing, like, four people doing it.
Right, exactly. You know, an interesting thing, just on a side note, I think that I agree with you, by the way. Just if you don't mind me telling you my take on this, I think the basic technology of augmented reality, virtual reality, augmented reality from the game and what will spawn from the game is very exciting. Unfortunately, Nintendo came out last week and said, you know, there's very little incremental revenue we're going to see from this for whatever reason, but that's now, seeing how I think that it could be a great advertising source. Can you imagine if a particular, let's call it maybe a store, a retail establishment or a restaurant, had somehow the ability to pay for Pokestops and maybe a gym or whatever it is, and they pay for that right, the amount of business it could potentially bring in if the game maintains its popularity, and then the revenue that would be brought to, let's call it Nintendo or the game manufacturer. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's something that definitely could happen with the game. My only thing is, even, you know, just being that, you know, that 17-year-old that plays Pokemon in Chicago with all his friends, I mean, the first 2 weeks it came out, I mean, we, since, you know, it's Chicago, it's summertime, it's nice, and we would go outside and play for hours. And what you're saying about businesses doing better because there's Pokestops is absolutely correct. I mean, we would only stop at places for lunch that had a Pokestop
right, where
we could sit and play Pokemon from within the restaurant.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, 3 weeks now it's just kind of like, not so much a big thing, which is, I think, a lot of people that, you know, initially got on that, the Pokemon Nintendo stock on there did really well. But, I mean, I think it's one of those things that it's at least I would say a pretty risky investment, but an investment that if you can afford to take, that you should take.
Yeah, I mean, the stock is down from about 38 at its high recently, down to about 20, I don't know, 25 or so, but which is a big move. But it had a big move to the upside, and you saw that big excitement. So Getty, what are some of the things that you look into when you do research, and what you think are important aspects of a stock or a company?
Yeah, the big things I like to look at is where the company is now and what they're going to do to go somewhere. So I'm a big believer in trying to find companies that like to do a lot of research or a lot of not necessarily like branching out so much, because you got to be careful that you're not diversifying the company. Companies that are looking towards the future.
So what they're doing is that they have departments that are looking to create the next great thing or expand on what the particular item they have. I mean, we can look at a lot of companies that do that. Obviously, a lot of biotechs and healthcare-oriented companies are like that. Technology companies are like that. I mean, but what about some of the other companies that maybe are just looking to maintain and grow with their current structure? For example, you know, the area of, we'll say, consumer staples, companies like, a Colgate or a Procter & Gamble and things like that, that are just looking to maintain market or grow market share. Is that something that would be a little bit like, that's not the thing that excites me?
You know, it's not the thing that excites me, but it is something that I know is important for the portfolio. Because when I you know, a big chunk of my portfolio is made up of a lot of those technology stocks, and but I understand that at the same time, companies like Procter & Gamble, you got to have, you know, something, not necessarily Procter & Gamble, but something like that in your portfolio, because that's a company that no matter what's going on in the world, people are buying their stuff.
Right. So now let's get back to Tristan for a second here. So you had, I think, a discussion about the whole impact of Brexit. One of the videos that you put out was about Brexit, right?
Yeah.
So looking back on that, there was a lot of discussion about, oh my God, this is going to be the end of the world. It's going to be what's called a layman moment. There's going to be all sorts of, you know, catastrophes and all sorts of problems around the world. And that lasted about, 4 or 5 days. And then all of a sudden, markets kind of started moving higher. So what's your takeaway from that in terms of markets and their, you know, kind of, we live in a, it seems like markets are all one giant, if we could put a label on it, I guess markets are kind of a little bit ADD these days, right? Kind of can't focus on anything for too long and they move on to the next thing. What's your takeaway though?
I think, like, obviously the Brexit was a huge just factor. Everyone was freaking out and they weren't even really thinking about what would happen. They're just like, we have all these treaties to redo. And it was so much. I think that what I looked at mostly and, like, what I took away was that you have to really focus on the stocks that didn't go down because of the Brexit, but because of the fear of the Brexit, like stocks like PG or, who, I mean, they obviously, they own like Gucci and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so for the Brexit to happen, like, I think that the stock kind of rebounded really quickly because there wasn't that much of a negative effect on these stocks. And I think, obviously, these stocks are super ADHD, like you said, because ones that weren't even connected to international affairs in any way really plummeted for some reason, and they got right back up within 2 days. So I think in these situations, we really have to look at stocks that aren't necessarily tied to the event, but that will probably fall. Because what I did was I kind of thought about that and I was like, okay, well, this stock obviously fell the day of the got into the market. And then I just bought them when they were really down. And for some of them, they ended up staying down for longer than I'd hoped. But for stocks like PG and EOS, they came right back, which is nice.
Now, you two have only really been interested in this whole stock market. We got to call it post-2008, obviously, right? When there was extraordinary measures of monies being pushed into the markets by central banks and all sorts of government actions and all that. You really don't have a history and knowledge about anything before that, which may be good, it may be bad. I don't know. You know, for those of us that go back, you know, decades in this whole thing and we've seen various cycles and all that, you know that, hey, things go up, things go down, things go up. But for some of us who maybe just started doing this a short time ago, it's like, well, let's just buy the dip all the time, right? So where do you fall in that camp?
I think it's important to know what had the extremity of the dip because, I mean, obviously, yeah, like I have no experience prior to 2008. Thankfully, we weren't really trading in 2008 at all, which was good. But I think for certain stocks, it's good to buy during a dip, but it's also good to know, you know, what's the news behind this stock? Is their earnings just come out? Were they really bad? Did they just make a bad deal? Tesla was trying to buy SolarCity and they dipped so much because investors were like, you guys aren't focusing on just cars right now. You're branching out to all this random stuff. I think it's important to know when it's, how long the dip will be so that you can plan accordingly. If it's going to be, if you're really holding out this stock for the long term or if it's just for like a week or two.
Right. So just Getty, some of your favorite stocks these days?
Currently, my favorite stock is AMD. Going back to the whole research thing, I mean, that company pours insane amounts of money into research, some people would say, but it's really worked out for them over the past few months. Facebook is another favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. So again, some of the things you use now, do you use a computer with an AMD chip or an Intel chip?
You know, all my computers are Intel chips.
Right.
But I believe deeply in AMD's products. I just don't have any of them.
I get it. Well, it's not as easy to get an AMD product, right? You know, I mean, especially if you're Mac oriented.
Exactly.
It's not so easy. I mean,
exactly. And I'm very Mac oriented.
Right. So, as are most young people these days. And Tristan, what about some of your favorite stocks?
Right now, I'm really looking at Nugget, so NUGT, and PG and EOG, which is an oil stock.
EOG Resources, PG Procter & Gamble?
Yeah.
Okay, and Nugget, which is the three-time, so you're a gold bug? Or you like gold, huh?
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit of gold a little bit earlier this summer, and then Getty told me to look into Nugget, and I looked into Nugget, and I was like, well, I have to invest right now. But yeah. I've been pretty gold heavy.
I think Nugget's up about 400% this year.
Yeah, I know. It's been insane.
I mean, this is coming off a very, very, very deep, deep drop of many of the gold stocks. Just know, obviously, and I know you have your dad and all that talk to you about it, but Nugget is, it will degrade over time by the natural nature of a 3-time leveraged ETF. You know, just if Nugget stays at, if gold stocks stay at zero, you will eventually lose on Nugget. As long as the trend is in your favor, you're in great shape. But if it starts getting a little choppy or if it starts just flattening out, Nugget can get really hit. Your dad knows a lot about that, I'm sure. So that's great. So
I'm unfortunately the hard way.
You know what? Some of them...
So
some of them, actually, some of the doubles and triples, we talk about this on the show a lot, but some of the doubles and triples, actually, there's some good ones out there that don't have that degradation and that natural loss factor. But the commodity-related leveraged ETFs, any of the commodity-related, are because of the way that the futures roll, et cetera, could be very, very difficult. And even the VIX-oriented ETF, the single and the double and the triple. These are very, very tough. These are kind of short-term holds. You know, I know Nugget's up 300 or 400% this year. I get that. But again, the trend was right with you. So just be aware of that and just be careful of that. How can people find you? I know you have a Twitter account. What's the Twitter account?
It is Tristan and Getty. We have a Twitter account. We have our YouTube videos. So if you look up Tristan and Getty or Teen Traders, we will come up. And yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Listen, I wish you the best of luck. And, you know, we'll have you on when you make this a professional career.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And it's my pleasure. Thanks, guys, for coming aboard. All right, let's as we talked about before we got to both Getty and Tristan, I had wanted to talk about the idea of or the concepts of economics. You know, what does it mean? These days, not much. Because what we saw was a really weird number come out of the report on Friday. Let's go through the list first. Let's go through what we saw last week. So we saw the Case-Shiller 20-city index came in at about 5.2%, meaning that housing prices over the 20 main cities were rising, but still the overall consensus was for about 5.5 and prior was 5.4, which is interesting that housing prices are continuing to rise on a year-over-year basis, and that's good to see, but I was kind of surprised that we missed the mark. But again, that could be a noisy number 1 month versus the next. Consumer confidence came out from... the BLS, I believe it was, the conference board. And that was about 97.3. Last month was about 97.4. So that's good. New home sales beat the stuffings out of estimates. And we saw a pretty significant number, 592,000 on an annualized basis. Consensus was about 560, 570. Prior was about 572. Good to see that the housing market is still strong. And obviously with very low rates, it makes a lot of sense that that's doing well. Now, we missed on durable goods ex transportation. Prior month was about a negative 2.8%, and this month came in a negative 4%. Estimates were for about a negative 1%. That didn't seem to bother the markets too badly. However, the fact is that we did see that the dollar started to weaken a bit for when this report should have been. And still we're seeing a little bit of a layoff on durable goods orders. And that's concerning to me when you look at the overall trend. But again, nothing so concerning that it's, you know, going to get you terribly upset. Now, the same day on Wednesday, we saw the FOMC rate decision. The Fed came out with nothing. They saw the economy was doing better. They saw employment was doing good. And they actually put in a line in their statement. And I think this is a kind of an important line here that said that the risks from outside, like the Brexit and maybe Europe, have dissipated a bit and have come down. Well, that's kind of setting the stage right now for potentially a September rate hike. Now, remember something. This market that we're seeing right now, with the incredible amount of margin and leverage in it, and on top of that, more importantly, the low cost of borrowing that is allowing companies to buy back shares at a record pace, shrinking their float, bringing up their EPS because there's less shares outstanding, is predicated on a very low interest rate environment. If interest rates come up, a lot of things start to get funky, really funky. Because if interest rates start to come up to a point where it doesn't make sense for companies to borrow at the rate that they have been borrowing and put debt on their books like they've been putting on, I mean, Apple's at historic levels right now because they've been buying back shares like crazy. And they've been doing so and funding it through debt issuance. And that makes a lot of sense at a low rate. That's good. The problem comes in fact, we see a significant revenue slowdown one day into the future, and the debt service becomes an overwhelming part of their overall expense costs, and that starts hitting their EPS. That's where the problem lies. Now, hopefully they can stay ahead of the curve, and that's what seems to be going on. They seem to be trying to, this is not just Apple, but company after company is trying to stay ahead of the curve by buying back as much shares as possible, thereby shrinking the float and, of course, like I said, increasing the EPS because of lower, less shares outstanding. So if, in fact, we do see, and this is why we saw probably the market sell-off in the fourth quarter or part of the third, fourth quarter of last year and into the first quarter of this year where we saw that drop, is because if you have the potential for a higher dollar and a higher interest rate, that is a double whammy for many companies. So keep your eye on that. On Thursday, we saw initial claims and continuing claims. That was all fine and good. Nothing wrong there. Looking good still. Now, Friday, as I mentioned, we saw the GDP number. Now, the GDP number came in at 1.2%, where this is the advanced GDP for quarter two. Expectations were for about a 2.6. The prior GDP was actually 0.8, which was revised lower from 1.1%. And the chain deflator was at 2.2%, which was a lot higher than expected. Employer cost index was right on marks. And we did see the Michigan sentiment final number that came in was actually 90, a little bit lower than the 93.5 that was originally put out for July. Now, the thing that I was talking about that was really a head scratcher was how little the markets really reacted to the very poor GDP number. And the only thing that you can keep going back to time and time again, it's the same thing over and over, is simply that everybody believes that the Fed has their back and that now that we have one item that is soft, a big item, GDP is a very important item, but we look at that and we see, well, that's kind of soft. Well, that, you know what that means? Take a second, think about it. What does it mean? It means that the Fed's going to be on hold for even longer. So, again, this if you really want to get down to brass tacks and look at this objectively, just for a moment, just look at this objectively. Yes, the market keeps on being very resilient. Every dip is bought, but why? If it's important to you to understand why, and we talked about this whole behavioral finance with Daniel Crosby a couple episodes ago, it's because there is a feeling that, you know what, I'm very confident, so behavioral, I'm very confident that there is going to be nothing that could really go wrong because the Fed has our backs. Now, that lasts for as long as it lasts, however long that is. But the point that we'd also talk about probably with Dr. Crosby is don't get overconfident with that because one day it's not going to be here. And then what? So just keep that in mind. Now, next week coming up, it's a bigger week. Well, bigger week in terms of information out, maybe not as important, but some things are pretty important next week. Starting off with Monday at 10 o'clock in the morning with the ISM index. Now, that's going to be pretty important. Throughout the year, we see this ISM, which is a manufacturing index. And of course, the number 50 is the important number. Below 50 is contraction. Above 50 is expansion. Last month in July, June, we saw 53.2. This month, coming up, 52.1 is the estimate. We have construction spending also coming out on Monday. On Tuesday, another important one is personal income, personal spending. Personal income is expected to rise ever so slightly to about 0.3 from 0.2. Personal spending is expected to dip ever so slightly. We're going to see auto sales and truck sales also. Now, we did see, I don't know if you saw this, it's kind of interesting. The last few months, we've been seeing record numbers of sales in autos and trucks. However, Did you see the horrible number that Ford put in? That's pretty concerning. We have a very small position of Ford in the portfolio that we manage for on aggressive, the TDIMG growth, managed growth strategy. We have a very, very small position of Ford. But what's interesting about that is that Ford is, how are these companies selling so many cars? Well, many months ago, we talked about the concern about how there is some of the excessive incentives that are going on, the extension of loans and leases from what used to be 3 and 4 years to 6 and 7 years. Still, they could have been doing a lot better, but it seems that Ford, when we looked into the numbers, the incentives that they're doing is really squishing their margins pretty significantly. Not the same exactly with GM, but Ford's numbers were kind of concerning. But, and what's going to happen, the big question is what's going to happen if, in fact, auto and truck sales start slowing, if they start slowing, if interest rates come back up. Again, a lot of this is predicated on very low interest rate assumptions as well as incentives. But we're going to see what that is. Last month, we had truck sales at 8.5 million pace for the year and auto sales at 4.95 million for the month of July. What else do we have? ISM services. Now, this is an important number. So we get the ISM composite or the ISM first line, which is the manufacturing, coming out Monday. And then on Wednesday, we have the ISM services. Now, the services is more important in the U.S. in that we are more of a service-oriented economy. Last time we saw 56.5. We've been keeping well above the 50 level on services for a very long time. And expectations are for about 56.1. Thursday initial claims, factory claims, continuing claims, and factory orders will be coming out. Not that important. But on Friday, it is the first week of the month, the first Friday of the month, August 5th. And you know what that means? Non-farm payrolls. We'll find out what the employment rate is and what the actual numbers are. Now, last time, remember, we saw a blowout. 267,000 were added to the payrolls in the month of June. Now, July is looking like, from an estimation, about 185,000. And we're looking at a unemployment rate of probably about 4.8, dropping it down from about 4.9. We're also going to be looking at average hourly earnings. Now, really, if anything is to be said, we know that the numbers, when it comes to the employment numbers, are some of the most important when it comes to how markets react. If, in fact, we see a weak number, are we going to have the kick in of, well, the Fed's got it, don't worry about it? If we see a very strong number, we'll see, well, things are doing really well and the Fed's going to lay off for a while. That's the kind of mentality right now. That's what happened in the last number. While the dollar shot up after that, got very strong, the dollar has been coming, had been coming down a bit. We did see, which we're going to talk about in a second, the poor move, the really disastrous move that the Bank of Japan did last week, but we'll talk about that in a second. So we're going to see this and really going to get down and dirty into what the mentality is. I do think that if we see two strong numbers in a row, it's actually not going to be as good as we saw last time, because last time was a surprise to the upside. If there is strong numbers, as we've seen, I think the Fed is going to start to think about possibly at least one, if not possibly, maybe two rate hikes by the end of the year, bring it up to maybe 1%. Now, I know we're in election cycle. November, of course, is a time they usually try to stay away from the elections and not do anything in there. So really, they have September and then December as a time period to do something. Who knows? I mean, this Fed has been as dovish as can be, scared and afraid of every single scenario that has happened around the world, has basically thrown in the towel to the idea of increasing rates because they're too afraid to do so. Because they also know that there is so much that is now related to the low rates. As we mentioned, the excessive margin and leverage. Of course, what they have on their books in terms of bonds. The dollar, which is now starting to creep higher. And all this goes into play that the central bank is pretty much frozen. I'd like to see higher rates. I think that would actually help the economy. Not high rates, but higher rates than we have at this current time. Because I think the Fed gets into a position of potentially having things backfire on them the longer that they wait. And an example of this is what's happening in Europe and happening in Japan. In Europe, we know they went negative on their rates and they have negative deposit rates, and they've been pushing that pretty hard. And what's happened? Well, the euro has actually come up in value significantly. The latest move by the Bank of Japan, which has overly promised and underprovided, if you will, and it's just really the latest move. They put out so many different trial balloons and seeing what would happen. And we saw the yen moving all over the place, a highly anticipated meeting last week, that they were going to provide some major stimulus to the markets to try to not only reinvigorate their economy, but also bring down the value of the yen compared to other currencies around the world, because the yen is the best performing currency of the developed markets this year. It's up in a big way. That's not good for Japanese stocks. And what'd they do? Well, instead of coming out with a major stimulus package and maybe even more quantitative easing or maybe perpetual bonds or helicopter money like everybody had been anticipating, they decided, you know what we're going to do? To bring up the inflation rate, we think the best thing for us to do is continue with the buying of ETFs and real estate investment trust REITs in the open market on the Nikkei, and we're going to double up our purchases. So they basically are saying that somehow, magically, they're going to bring up the inflation rate by buying stocks in the open market. Now, they already own about 50% of the overall Nikkei right now. How is this going to help? It hasn't, by the way, just for a point, if anybody's listening in Japan, it hasn't worked so far. You've been doing it for a long time. The only thing you've done is help to prop up stocks, which, by the way, are not doing very well this year, down about 13 or 14% this year itself. Forget about the yen, just on a dollar or a simple price basis. So I don't know what they're thinking. It's becoming idiotic and to a level of just mass stupidity that they think that they can actually manipulate markets to push on inflation. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Does it make any sense to you? We know already that the quantitative easing program has not done anything for their inflation rate. We know that they have an aging population, a slowing economy, a lot more competition, and a world that's slowing down, especially when it comes to their closest neighbors. Asia is not doing well. China, the only reason why China has been holding up is because the amount of loans and lending that's going on there, that pretty much is the core way that they have propped up their economy for years. Their bad loans are skyrocketing. Their economy continues to just stagnate, if not slow down further. And now you have the yen at 102 and change, which rose by 3%. 3%. After this announcement, because there was significant disappointment with the Bank of Japan's decision, basically just to do a little and to do something that doesn't have any effect on the currency outright. Well, they can go in and defend it. They can go in and intervene. You know, they're really good at that, the Bank of Japan. But 3%, that is enormous. A lot of dissatisfaction with, and more so, not only dissatisfaction, but at this point, there's a total loss of confidence when it comes to the Bank of Japan. And that's my concern with not only the Bank of Japan, but also the ECB and what will happen potentially that will spread to the Fed here. That's when things start to get dicey. If we lose confidence in the central banks, it's going to take a long time for them to win that back. Anyway, so I want to talk about that and give you a little bit of insight into that. We also talked about this and some stocks. I mentioned four or five stocks on Frank Curzio's podcast. You should listen to that. You know, by the way, each and every week on DH Unplugged, another show that we do on Tuesday nights, myself and John C. Dvorak, we have a competition, and you as the listeners can actually participate. We have a way for you to participate and win some great goodies like DH Unplugged t-shirts. We have a game that we call Closest to the Pin. Whoever gets closest to the price of a stock on a certain date, and we have these announced and all that, you win a prize. You compete with other listeners and against John and myself. And you got to check it out. It's a pretty cool competition. So go over to dhunplugged.com. Click on the right side. You'll see the right side says close to the pin competition. What's running? We have two running right now. One's Shake Shack and one is with the Dow Jones Industrial Average right now through DIA, where we're having a, we're calling it the DHCTP Cup. It's going to be 4 or 5 different months. The winners then will go into another competition against each other. Those finalists will be in a competition against each other for the year-end prize, which we will announce over on dhunplugged.com. If you want any more information, of course, I mentioned last week, if you go to last week's episode, you can download the Horowitz & Company Economic Commentary. So just click over to that. I'll put the links, I'll put it in this week's as well. I'll put that where you can download that commentary. So just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I know it's threw a lot at you there, but DH Unplugged is one thing you could do for the close to the pin game. FrankCurzio.com, his podcast. And of course, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, where you can download, of course, the podcasts. You can find out more about Twitter and information about how we manage money. Also download the latest quarterly commentary that we published. Well, that's going to end it here. I hope you enjoyed our show and the Teen Traders. And we'll be back with you next week with another great guest, some commentary and some discussion about what is going to happen for the rest of the year. And a lot of that will be dictated by how we do see the reports that come out this week, the finalization of earnings season over the next couple of weeks, and maybe some even some stock ideas for you. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.